Hi and welcome to a new episode of You Podcast. My name is Asim Birney, and today we are talking about Bahubali to the conclusion. We have an interview with SS Rajamouli on the podcast that a lot of people have kind of seen already, but we haven't reviewed the movie. So I thought I'd get like the best guys to talk about this movie and lady. So I've got Amrita, Sujoy, and Josh with me. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Because it seems that we're getting a lot of new listeners, and I guess this is probably the Rajamouli effect. So maybe you can just do some introductions too. So Amrita, I mean, you've been on the show before, but where can people find you? Where do you you also have your podcast right now too, right?
Yeah. So Beth loves Bollywood, and I have a podcast which is called Masala Zindabad, and we have the new season coming up. We started posting episodes, and it's a sort of vintage commercial Bollywood kind of podcast. It's quite fun. Check it out. But apart from that, I'm on Twitter. I'm Amrita IQ. Mm. But I don't have a blog anymore, sadly.
Yeah, yeah. Blogs are so passé. Sujoy, man.
Yeah. So I'm everywhere. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @93k. I used to do a podcast called Bollywood Podcast. I've kind of got lazy and never posted anything on there for a long, long time. And I've been just been lazy. I want to start projects and then I just slide into my lazy face. But yeah, you can still see my rants and random posts on Instagram and Twitter at @93k.
Yeah, and I still always say, you know, if you don't know where a Bollywood GIF is coming from, it's probably coming from Sujoy.
Yeah. Josh, that's another dormant project of mine.
Yeah. Josh, man.
Yeah, I'm a film writer for ScreenAnarchy.com. I've written about Indian films for many years now, and just an enthusiast. You can find me on Twitter at HatefulJosh and everywhere else with
awesome.
The same name as well.
So let's talk about Bahubali. I don't think we can have a bigger movie to talk about. So Amrita, I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts about Bahubali too.
Right. So I enjoyed it. But I feel like I would have enjoyed it regardless, because it was sort of like being swept up in an event kind of a feeling. So I went in a very positive kind of mind frame, and I've just, you know, it's been a busy time in my life. So it was a really welcome break. So I really enjoyed having to go out to a fun movie at the end of the week. But in terms of the movie itself, I felt like there were things that I wished I had seen this as a double feature in the theater. And I know like some people have had that experience, and I really envy them that, because it really was part one and part two together. It really does make like one movie. And I think it's structured that way, because I was thinking about like why so many people have been sort of iffy about the structure of the second movie. And I think it's because it's structured as the second part of, you know, one regular giant movie.
It's and the post interval.
Yeah. And I also think, so my big problem in the first movie was basically the character of Tamanna, who basically got the short end of the stick. And, you know, she was supposed to be this cool assassin. And then he just basically pretties her up and says, "Hey, your cool quest, I'm just going to take it over because I love you, baby." And then goes off and like does it for her, which I thought was really shitty. Although, you know, in the terms of the logic of the movie, it actually made sense, because that's how he needs to go and rescue his mom. Like, obviously.
She also sprained her ankle, right?
Yeah, I mean, but like, it's like she's like a trained assassin, and she's just like, "Ooh, my sprained ankle. What can I do? I'm so sorry." Anyway, I have a lot of issues with that first movie. So, with the second movie, I felt like the whole Devasena and Shivagami, dynamic really saved it for me. Even though the two of them were kind of shitty in their own ways. I mean, Devasena is basically like the most undiplomatic brat I've ever met in my life, where she's just like, you know, "I hate you. You're stupid. Your son is stupid. You should all die. Give me this throne." And I'm just like, girl, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, like Devasena has no chill.
No, none whatsoever. And then Shivagami, on the other hand, is just sitting there like, wait, what? Like, you don't love me? You know, like, she just becomes like this mother from hell where she's like, wait, you've got another woman in your life. How dare you? I hate you now. And then she just makes all these like random decisions where I'm just like, well, but you're Shivagami. Like, you are like this really cunning kind of master manipulator who can see, like, you know, who plays like three-dimensional chess according to the first movie. And then in the second movie, you're a total fucking idiot, like, just listening to whatever your terrible son and husband are telling you. So I had issues like that, but the way that the two women were facing off with each other, the way Devasena was introduced, the dynamic between Devasena and Amarendra Bahubali was lovely, because he was, you know, he wasn't like taking over for her. He was actually teaching her stuff. And that whole, like, not to give away spoilers, but there's that scene where he's teaching her how to shoot multiple arrows, but it's sort of choreographed like a ballet, and I thought it was lovely, and it really sort of set them up like equals. Like, you know, like, he actually saw her as somebody that he admired rather than just somebody that he wanted to protect, which I felt was like really redressing all the things that I found wrong in the first movie. But yeah, like, I had a good time. I think it'll be a while before I can get to judge it on the on its own merits, because it kind of felt like I was sort of swept up in this event. Yeah
So it kind of a bit of that Avatar kind of thing going on, you know, where it's such a big thing, you have to watch the movie, and then later on somewhere like maybe Avatar wasn't that great, but I loved Avatar, I'm just saying. Trying to find a comparative. So Joy, man, what about you, general thoughts?
Well, I think a lot of multiple thoughts are circling, you know, my head right now when I go back and think Bahubali 2, because, well, I've seen the movie 3 times at the cinema now, and every repeat viewing just keeps rewarding in its own way. I get to explore more about the universe, and I think I've given up on thinking whether it's on its own is a good movie or a great movie or whatever. I just keep thinking of how much it is a labor of love, and all the effort that has been put into making this universe real and shine on screen. So yeah, I mean, it's not just an expansion of the universe that was set up in one, but it's a continuation of the story, and so it comes together as a whole rather than separate, I suppose.
Josh, man.
But again,
yeah, sorry.
I mean, we'll talk about the Katappa cliffhanger in a bit. But
yeah, we will. Josh, man.
I loved it. I was pretty much set up to love this film, though. I mean, I have personal stakes in Rajamouli's career, you know, going somewhere. And it, like both Sujoy and Amrita said, it is very much a continuation. I think one of the things that's kind of funny is I was looking back over, because I've been covering the film since 2013, when the very first images of the film came out, you know, through the press. And I remember looking back at the very first behind the scenes image that they released from the film, or whatever what it was. And the first image that was released of the film 4 years ago was from the conclusion. It wasn't from Bahubali the beginning. It was a picture of Prabhas from the scene where they're going into the court scene, which, you know, it underscores the fact that this was never supposed to be like, oh, well, Bahubali is going to be a movie. And then if it's successful, we'll make a second one. It was always one long story that they just couldn't justify putting into the theaters all at once. Kind of like Gangs of Wasseypur was one continuous story that they had to release over 2 parts because a 5-hour movie is not commercially viable. I think that they did a lot, like Emmerich said, to step the storytelling, to correct perhaps some of the criticisms of part one as far as Avantika, Tamana's story went, sort of, you know, sideways. And that was one of the big criticisms of part one. They did a lot to correct that with Devasena's story and making her, you know, more, giving her more agency as far as her abilities, and everything. And again, like Emerita said, even though the women characters in the film are not, you know, perfect people, really nobody is. And I think that's a good thing, for the storytelling, is that you don't make, you don't make characters who are perfect. You make flawed characters who can grow. Mm. And I think they did a very good job with that in the second film.
Mm. Can I quickly add here? Like, the first time I watched the second movie, I was actually, after Interval, I was actually panicking. I was like, even though the movie is called Bahubali, The Conclusion, I was panicking that they wouldn't conclude the story and they would like shift the story of Mahendra Bahubali into a third movie, and I was like, I'm not ready to watch wait for another 2 years for the third movie to come out, man.
And we need 8 hours of Bahubali.
Yeah. I mean, even though I would be happy in the long run, like, I would have 3 Blu-rays to watch the whole thing, but
yeah,
I was like, so, really panicking.
So can I, so I have like 2 things to add to that. Like, one is I saw the Tamil version of Bahubali, because the Hindi and Telugu versions weren't playing anywhere that near me. So I saw the Tamil version, and it was, I think it was like, there were cuts in the movie, because I've seen GIF sets from, the conclusion that I didn't see on screen. Like, there's this whole, yeah, so there's this whole, I've seen GIFs of Rana and, Anushka together. That I like Bhalla and Devasena, and I did not see that in my version. So I think
I also heard like there, you know, the song where they are flying in the sky in the ship that flies. So Bahubali and Devasena share a kiss, and it's edited out in the Tamil version.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that as well. Yeah,
no, they got it on in mine in the Telugu. I was actually. I was lucky enough to watch one of the only Telugu prints apparently in the UK, because the distributor made a decision to release it only in Tamil and Hindi in the UK. Probably some sort of demographic calculation that they made. So it's very hard to actually even watch the Telugu print here. So, Sujoy, I imagine you've seen either the Hindi or the Tamil version.
Yeah, I saw the Hindi one.
What about you, Josh? Did you get like a special DVD sent to you?
No. We have a substantial Telugu population here, so I saw Telugu twice in the theaters. Okay. Actually, I saw it on IMAX on opening day, which was a great experience. And then a few days later, I saw it, the Telugu version again on a regular screen. But the second time I saw it, some of the gore was censored. Like, there was blurring.
Violence. Mine even had some awkward, really awkward cuts, like,
that could just be Tollywood movies. So.
Yeah, there were a few of those that I was like, we can talk about it maybe more in the spoiler section. Although, spoiler section, I don't even know if we need a spoiler section, but let's keep the big topics at the end. But I think the whole world has seen this movie, so it's hard to not spoil it. And I think that's the whole point, you know, like, of a podcast. We can go deeper than a review can. So, I mean, we're going to be spoiling things. So people, just be prepared for it. Just kind of my general thoughts. This is tough for me, because it feels for me like almost like Beyoncé's Lemonade or Get Out, the movie by Jordan Peele that came out a while ago. I'm enjoying it. I'm liking it. But I understand that I'm not the core audience for this. So it's like, I'm seeing everybody super excited, and especially like meeting. And it was a very weird situation, because I love Magadira. I think Magadira is probably my favorite movie of Rajamouli. I liked Iga, and I like Bahubali a lot, but he has this source. He's almost like a godlike figure now, right? Because I was at that press junket, and people were just begging him for a moment of his time. And these are things I see when I go to an event where Shah Rukh is there or something like that, you know? And, for a movie director that had this kind of, love from the audience is just, it's very odd. And like, I was there at the press junket and I saw Anushka Shetty, and it was a very weird situation, because I've never seen her in a movie, or maybe in some small role that I'd never but imagine you're in a room with Deepika Padukone and she's just a very pretty looking Indian lady. You know, it's a very weird situation, because I'm not part of that world. I'm not part of that fandom. So I really enjoyed it, but I did feel that it wasn't mine to own in a way. And it's where I think, you know, Josh, you kind of feel maybe you do own it because you've been so involved, but there's also, you know, in a way, that cultural aspect that you probably always struggle with, you know? So I had that too, because I'm a very much a Bollywood commercial, to the annoyance of so many people. I just like my
including including me.
And you, you know, I like my, I love my Khans, I love my Shah Rukh, I love my armor, you know. So, you know, all the think people, and there's so many think pieces. There's so many think pieces about Bahubali. You know, it's the end of the Khans, and it's the end of this, and it's the end of that. And honestly, it's going to be the end of nothing, in my opinion. They're going to make 3-4 watered down versions of Bahubali. It's not going to work. It's going to end up disappointing, and the Khans will make their movies and things will continue like they did. At least in Bollywood, I feel. But that's my personal opinion.
I kind of see the same thing coming. You know, this is, it's exciting. Obviously, they just, they've been posting all day, the team, about the fact they've just broken the 1,000 crore, you know, ceiling. That no other Indian film has done before. But, you know, when Eid rolls around and Tube Light comes out, it'll be Tube Light for a couple of weeks. You know, I don't have, if Tube Light breaks this record, it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah.
You know, just because we talk a lot about how these films break box office records, but honestly, it happens every year.
Yeah.
You know, we should, it's lovely for the fans of whoever's in the film, if it's a Salman fan or if it's a Shah Rukh fan or whoever it is. But it's really just bragging rights for a couple of months, and then it's over.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm hoping that Bahubali turns into something else. But
I would also like to point out that, you know, this 1,000 crore business, Bahubali tickets in the States were like something like $30 or something.
$45. I paid $45 to see it in IMAX.
Goodness. That is ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous.
But
I did it happily, you know.
So
not only that. So this is something that's sort of unique to South Indian film fandom, at least in the States. I don't know if it's anywhere else as well. But not only were my tickets, they were $40 plus the service fees or whatever, you know, which ended up being $90 for my wife and I. But in the row that we were sitting, I was wearing my Bahubali polo shirt because I'd gotten sent one a while ago and it finally fit, and I was excited to wear it. But everyone else in my row had custom-made T-shirts for Bahubali 2. So not only did they pay the $45 to sit there, they paid whatever it cost to get their custom T-shirts made, you know, and the theater made samosas for us, which was great. But it's an entire investment. And the way I've tried to compare it for people who don't really understand this is that it's the difference between, you know, your favorite band listening to a CD of theirs and going to a live concert of theirs. Like, this is an event. It's, and Hindi films don't have that kind of impact here, at least, on opening weekend. They'll charge the same as a regular film would charge, $10-$12. But Telugu and Tamil films, that when they open, they're routinely in the $20 to $25 range. You know, the fact that I paid $40 was because it was IMAX. I mean, the regular ticket prices were $30 or whatever, which is still ridiculous. But it's not something that we weren't expecting. And I think that's one of the things when people do their sort of box office comparisons, like everyone is talking about, that doesn't get talked about. You know, they talk about the amount of money, but they don't talk about, you know, I guess the footfalls, you know, the number of tickets that are being purchased, you know.
Which is interesting, because the only person I know who talks about footfalls is actually Karan Johar, who like is, I think, what's he doing for Bahubali? He's a presenter. Or
yeah,
he's
like a brand ambassador for the Hindi market.
But I think it's a good tie-up for them, you know, like it did help.
Absolutely.
It did impact something having that kind of, and this just seems, because I don't know much about all of this, but there's still a north-south divide apparently, and a lot of Bollywood movies don't get down south, or they don't get English translations or subtitles or something like that. So it's kind of like, it was good that this movie was then imported to the north side. And I think also, like what Amrita is saying, ticket prices are a factor in it, but also just how many prints there were. Like, it's insane. Yes. Like, I've never seen that many prints.
It is a pan-Indian release, and that helps, I guess.
So
I think what they've done is, like, very cleverly, I don't know whose decision it was, but they've taken a page out of the Disney playbook. Which is why Disney's been like improving its box office in India over the past few years, because they've basically been paying attention to dubbing. So they sort of like moved out of the subtitling market and into dubbing because it's just easier, and then sort of like trying to make it more decent and more relatable. And they've basically been building market share for the past few years. And I think that's what Bahubali's been doing as well within the Indian market. And then with like outside India, you know, the fact that they have subtitles and, you know, they've been doing that for a while, but I'd be interested to know who was doing the subtitles for Bahubali, because they're actually pretty good. Because I went back to YouTube and they've got like the Telugu version of Bahubali on YouTube for free right now with subtitles. And the subtitles are actually kind of good, which is like, you know, a rarity for Indian films.
I know the woman that did the subtitles and she'd be very happy to hear that.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah. She's a writer or a poet, right? Or something like that. I heard that something.
I think yeah, I think her mother was a poet, and right. And she's been doing subtitles. It's a big push of hers to get these regional films out to the world. So
yeah.
See, that's what works. Like, you know, people with passion and with like a stake in it, basically, rather than people who are just hired to like push out content.
Mm. So I think this kind of brings me to that one of the talking points I kind of had about it. And again, this podcast is going to be more maybe talking points than actual review, because the reviews are already out there, but. To me, like, I was reading this article about how South Indian movies and Bollywood in India are still devaluated because most of them come on a TV channel. They're badly dubbed. The songs a lot of times are cut or not bothered translated, and it just cheapens the whole experience. And with Bahubali, they really put a lot of effort in actually, you know, translating the songs and having, you know, proper writers and proper dubbings. And it almost feels like this movie is not just a movie, but it feels to a certain degree a vindication of a lot of different factors, and one being, like, you know, against Bollywood dominance in India, and also kind of the devaluation of South Indian movies. And it's something that I kind of asked Rajamouli on the podcast too, because that was on the interview, because that seems to be a lot of the Twitter conversations that's going on. And I think Josh, I think you and me had this talk about it a while back, that the fandom in South India, it's very particular. It's so passionate, more than any other type of fandom I've seen. But it's also kind of partly kind of with a inferiority complex or something like that. I'm not an expert in this, but am I kind of touching on something that you've also felt?
Is it the same in case of Malayalam cinema, Amrita?
You think
Mohanlal fans are really as passionate as, say, a Rajinikanth fans or Chiranjeevi fans?
Yes, but not in the same way. Like, I feel like if Mohanlal tomorrow decided to run for government office, like, Malayalis would be like, what? Like, what even is that? But, like, I feel like Tamilians would vote for Rajinikanth in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So,
I would vote for Rajinikanth in a heartbeat as well.
He's a good guy, you know, whatever. But no, so I have so many thoughts about this, but I will try not to be too political or too much of an academic about this, because literally I've written like two papers about this last term. So you don't want to get me started. But I will say that basically what's happening right now with Bahubali and the whole North-South divide, that is real. And it's kind of taking place against this context of what's happening in India, where we're seeing a lot of regional chauvinism sort of come up again. Like, we've had these conversations a long time ago and we thought we had sort of come past it. But right now, the North Indian, like the BJP, which is the government in power, they have like a lot of people who are North Indians in their party, and they're sort of saying these things about like how Hindi is the national language, which, by the way, it isn't, and about what, you know, South Indians call the imposition of Hindi and of North Indian culture, which South Indians have very strong opinions about. And the fact that Bahubali came out and it did better than Bollywood films, and that's become an international craze and such a huge success, so in a way that people are sort of equating Indian film with this very Telugu film. And Bahubali is a very Telugu film, which, you know, we can talk about in the spoiler section. And that's sort of like becoming a sort of I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like becoming like one of a, it's becoming a focal point for all these people who are sort of been building up resentment over the past year or maybe 2 years about like how, and you know, within the context of like what's been happening over the past 60, 70 years about what, you know, they're seeing as the sidelining of South Indian culture. And South Indian movies, and, you know, South Indians do feel very strongly about their movies, and they do feel that their product is superior than a lot of North Indian stuff. You know, Malayalis love to talk about how Malayalam cinema is like so much more, you know, evolved, and it's better made. And then like Bollywood is like trash and all that kind of stuff. And now like Telugu cinema comes out and it's like, you know what? Like we even make your trash better than your trash. So it's becoming like a sort of rallying cry for chauvinists from the South, I feel.
I think most of it has to do with how, what kind of South Indian cinema is being broadcasted on Indian television right now. So yeah, it's pretty much that era. So what Indian or Hindi movie channels broadcast is just the masala portion, or whatever you can classify under 90s masala kind of movies, and they are being badly dubbed and then, you know, redistributed and just played on repeat across all channels. So probably people just discard them as repetitive stuff, because earlier when we were growing up, we were only watching movies on a Sunday on Doordarshan. Like these were dubbed movies or subbed movies of Mani Ratnam or you know, Adul Gopalakrishnan and all those. So the view of South Indian cinema has kind of deteriorated because of this broadcast change, I suppose.
But is it also not that idea that, you know, almost Hollywood also has, you know, that an action movie does well everywhere globally because you don't need to understand the plot. So you can just like, you know, push it out to any country and it'll just do well, thinking of Fast and Furious or whatever, you know, or Triple X, something like that. Whereas a comedy or a kind of an art movie can be so specific to the area and it needs a lot more engagement from the audience. Maybe that's why they don't push it. I mean, I'd seen Prabhas movies before on one of those Sony Max or Set Max or whatever that's called. And they all ended up like a bad 80s Bollywood movie where somebody gets raped and he pretty much kicks ass of 500 people. And he's like pushing cars and stuff like that. So those are the kind of that a lot of times is the only kind of experience I do have with South Indian movies. And I mean, I'm open to watching anything, but those are the only ones. And again, I think this is a thing I've told Josh or other people, that I would love to watch a lot of these movies, but I just can't find them with good subtitles. There's no, you know, they're not on Netflix that much. When they do show up, like something like OK Janu by Mani Ratnam, I'll watch it. I'll watch Robot, which is on there too. But again, it's the Hindi dub, which is pretty awkward, I've heard. So it's a lot of it is also maybe just the kind of content is coming through to the North, or if I consider myself North, which I kind of am, I guess. What do you think, Josh? You have probably most insight about that.
I think you're all correct. I mean, and one of the things that has kept specifically Telugu cinema down, at least in the 10 years that I've been covering it, is the fact that they are, most of them are, like you said, they're like bad 80s Bollywood movies. You know, most of the films haven't evolved beyond that. Now, it's questionable whether or not Bollywood films have evolved beyond that. You know, they've got bigger budgets, they have better cinematographers, they have better effects than they maybe did back then. But on the whole, the films are generally the same style. I mean, they're the same style of films all over the world. Telugu films have a very, very particular audience that they seek to entertain. And because of that, a lot of the films feel very much the same. I think one of the things that's special about Bahubali and Bahubali 2 and just Rajamouli's films in general is that he doesn't really give a shit, honestly, about those particular ingredients that most Telugu filmmakers do to entertain the home audience. I think that he's got a broader vision, and in this case, he's been given license to to go after a broader audience. You know, even with films like Iga, Iga had, you know, some very Telugu moments in it, very, very Tollywood moments in it. But it was crazy enough and the story was universal enough that it was able to cross some boundaries. You know, it did moderately well in the North and, you know, it did some business overseas at film festivals as well. Magadira was even more, you know, Telugu centric, as far as the cultural, stuff with Brahmanandam and all the, you know, the comedy tracks and that kind of stuff that really.
Oh yeah, it had Brahmi.
Yeah, they really don't work without, you know, without some sort of context. I showed Magadira at a film festival last fall, and while people enjoyed it, you know, because what's not to enjoy? Somebody jumps a Jeep into a helicopter. But, you know, I remember I showed it twice, and the second time I had like a 5-minute sort of introduction, like, this is what you're going to see. This is why this is funny. This is why this exists in the film. And there was a better understanding of the movie, and people enjoyed it more. I don't think Bahubali needs that. Mm. You know, it's a fairly universal story. There's the talk of Dharma and the sort of, you know, I'm sure we'll get into later some of the caste based discussions that have sort of taken over the dissenting part of the critical community. But overall, it's a big, you know, period action film, and who doesn't love that? And it translates very well without having to do a whole lot of, you know, cultural explanation, I think, is what I'm going for.
Mm. So, go ahead, please.
Oh, I also think, like, and again, I don't know if this was something they actually thought about, or whether they just fell into it by chance and by, you know, great fortune. But I think what they've also done is sort of built on the goodwill that Chinese costume dramas have built over the past decade or so. And Telugu cinema has been very aware of that kind of stuff that's coming from out of China. As you can see from, like, you know, Anushka Shetty's Arundhati, which had like that scene from The House of Flying Dragons, basically, you know, copied like move for move. But it's basically this whole genre of, like, you know, you can call it costume dramas, you can call it period actioners, whatever you want to call it. Like, that's basically something that's a staple of Telugu and Tamil cinema. And I think they're, like, what Bahubali does is basically present that, but with some sort of strategic vision. And it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like they've got better subtitles. They're pushing it into markets where none existed before. They're trying to build on the goodwill created by similar product. I just think it's a very clever marketing push that this movie has had. And I really admire it.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, there have been similar pushes by other movies that have come after the first movie came out, like the Vijay movie that came out. What was that, with Sridevi?
Puli.
Puli and Kashmura also came out last year, but neither of them had the kind of the quality of the product.
But it also feels they've like locked into this kind of mythology aspect of it and nothing else of the movie. That's the only part they think this is why Bahubali worked, because it was kind of like this historical era piece. And I would even put Mohenjo-daro in that kind of zone. I really think Mohenjo-daro was trying to replicate Bahubali.
Please don't.
I really feel it. That's what they were kind of going after. And and that's what I feel is going to happen. We're just going to see a lot more of these kind of watered down, you know, historical epics, and they're all gonna fail.
It's been happening, like Sujoy said, with Kashmura, with Puli, with Rudramadevi, which was literally right after, because I remember watching Bahubali and Peter Hyam was doing the action choreography on the first part, and he left Bahubali to go do action choreography on Rudramadevi, which with Anushka also, which, you know, did fine, but it didn't do Bahubali business. And I think that's what they were expecting, was to see that. And, you know, Telugu films, like Amartya said, have been doing this for a while. I think what they did well, and what they did correctly this time in order for it to reach a larger audience was to pull away from the specific Telugu film tropes that they're used to. It wasn't a socio-fantasy film where they're interacting with the gods, and they do that a lot, you know, in Telugu films. They don't really do it much in any of the other industries anymore. They used to, but in Telugu films, it's still a very, very big thing. And I think they pulled away from making this, as you talked about in your interview, making this a Hindu film into making it a fantasy film. It's not a devotional film. It's not a mythological Hindu film. It's just a fantasy film that's somewhere in a vague Indian history, you know, that could or could not have existed. Who knows? But it's not. And even earlier this year, there was a Balakrishna film that was trying to capitalize on the same kind of thing. It did fine, but it was never going to be Bahubali. And I think you're right. I think that there are going to be more imitations to come, and we just have to sort of prepare ourselves for the onslaught of bad period films.
I think Rudramadevi is on Netflix. I've seen this movie come up a few times, and now that you're mentioning it, now I just IMDb it, and it's definitely. I hadn't even noticed that Rana Dagupati was in there, and Anushka Shetty. But getting back to the point you were kind of raising, and again about this idea of this movie being almost a vindication, or how people are taking ownership of it, beside the regional aspect, there is kind of the religious aspect to it. And I think also tied into it is this idea about the end of the Khans, because there's this, you know, Hindu-Muslim divide obviously going on. And again, I would love to hear your thoughts about this, because again, I don't have that much content. I'm a Khan fan, like I've said before so many times. And I am a Muslim. So, I don't get this sentiment necessarily. But it's interesting that for a majority, and this is a feeling that's happening everywhere. I think it's happening globally, where the majority is feeling like a minority. It's such a weird thing. And I mean, the end of the Khans has been declared since, you know, Hrithik Roshan came on board, or whoever else before that came on board, you know, it's a discussion that's been having, since they actually got going, I guess. But where do you kind of, I mean, it's a tough one. I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts about that? Is this the end of the Khans? Like, is this it?
That's all bloody fan-built hype, I think. I don't know. I don't think Salman, Shah Rukh, Amir, Saif even. Maybe not Saif.
Saif's not a Khan. Irfan is not a Khan. Let me just tell people, Irfan is not a Khan. Saif is not a Khan. There's only three Khans.
Go on. I mean, when it comes to the three Khans, I don't think they need to worry about what Bahubali would impact in their career or not, because Salman has tried doing that with Veer and that fall flat on his face, so never mind. Shah Rukh did it with Ahsoka.
Which was actually not a bad movie. I actually liked Ahsoka.
And I swear to God, there's a good movie in Veer, man. It just needs editing. I swear to God, there's a good movie in Veer.
There's an awesome trivia here, by the way. So the bandits that attack Kuntala, the kingdom of Kuntala, that's Devasena's kingdom in Bahubali 2, are the Pindaris. And guess what?
Danny Dingzong is a Pindari.
No, like Salman's tribe is a Pindari in Veer.
That's right.
Nice. That's something I noticed too, actually. That's something I noticed. And because I don't know the context of Pindaris. Are they supposed to be like Afghan or Muslims, or was there something like that? Because they had
I have no idea. I have zero idea. But in Veer, they're definitely not Muslim.
No, they're not.
But they have like weird tribal routines and lots of dancing and Nina Gupta.
Go ahead.
So I, I obviously agree with Josh when he's like talking about like how this is basically not actually Hindu. Like this is, you know, Bollywood and like all Indian film basically have this tradition of ye old time, which is, you know, my favorite is Mardh, where, you know, she's wearing like Victorian dresses, but they also have airplanes, and they're, you know, she's wearing a swimsuit in one scene, and then she's got like a frilly, like, you know, hoop skirt in the next one, and you're just like, what is this time period? But the thing is, like, a lot of the people that I see who are making this this sort of comment where, you know, they think Bahubali is some sort of Hindu revivalist success, these are not people who would actually understand things like that. Like, they don't seem to be high information viewers. Like, I have a feeling they think this is an actual story. Like, these are the kind of people who get, like, mad at Padmavati, and they don't even understand that Padmavati actually never existed. Like, these are incredibly, like, I'm sorry, but they're dumb. And I don't expect them to actually grasp the fact that Mahishmati actually never existed and what Rajamouli is trying to do.
But on the flip side, though, there are very strong Hindu influences in the work, right? I mean, we can't deny that, right?
So
yeah, there's the Shivalinga worship in the first one, and in the second one, he's getting beaten down and his blood is flowing through the Shivalinga, and he gets, you know, like his power gets a rescue battery, and then he stands up. There's in the imagery.
That actually fits in perfectly with the whole Telugu tradition of costume dramas, basically. Because not only, I mean, Patal Bhairavi.
Pronounce it any way you want, man. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Like, you know, if you go back to, like, a lot of the stuff that Jitendra did in the 80s, like the Telugu finance stuff that he did, those were basically, you know, stuff like that. Like, it was, you know, stuff that was based off a very specific kind of Hinduism that is practiced in Andhra Pradesh, which is a sort of, like, a mixture of, like, tribal faith and what is known as Hinduism in other parts of the country. So they have, like, for instance, in Arundhati, you know, they have this, they have these weird tribal people who make weapons out of your bones and stuff, which is, like, hardcore, like, pagan tribe sort of folklore kind of stuff that you can see along the east coast of India. So it's very cultural and it's rooted in a very native folklore kind of basis. So obviously, yes, it is rooted in Hindu mythology, but it is not, I don't think Rajamouli is trying to promote a sort of like Hindu culture or like a Hindu nation or, you know, this is the end of the Khans. I think one of the Khans got to him and was like, hey, I heard that you're doing the Mahabharata in 10 years. Can I get a role? He'd be like, yeah, bitch, like sign on. Like, that would be the dream, right?
But it's tough because even Nawazuddin can't do a Mahabharata in his own village, apparently, right? They kicked him out or something like that to do that.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. He was playing some character in a religious just play, and there was this whole
because he's Muslim, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So I don't see Aamir Khan playing in that kind of movie yet.
Like, I mean, there are times when I don't recognize this India at all, because, you know, like, Shah Rukh keeps talking about, like, how he grew up playing in Ram Leelas in Delhi, and that's the Delhi that I grew up in. So all this stuff about, like, how Nawaz Khan playing whatever it is that he wanted to play, like, that to me is shocking. But then I haven't lived in India for like 20 years. So what do I know?
Yeah, yeah. Joshman, did you have anything to add about the end of the Khans? I know you're looking forward to when that happens, but...
I like Shah Rukh and Amir, so I'll leave it.
You know that if Rajamouli makes a Hindi movie, he's going to Salman first, right? You know this, right?
Oh, Jesus.
You know that these two are going to get along so well. You know that's happening.
I think as everyone else thinks that on our panel here, that it's a ridiculous idea to think that this is the end of the Khans. I mean, they're going to keep making movies. They're going to keep making bajillions of dollars. And, you know, it's an anomaly. It's not the new normal for Indian films, you know, and frankly, it's interesting to us because we are clued into what's going on in India and Indian film and to a certain extent, you know, the competition between the industries. But To anyone who's not Indian, none of this makes any sense. You know, they don't see Bahubali 2 as a Telugu film. It's an Indian movie. That's all the world at large sees. If for whatever reason Tube Light goes, you know, decides to make a the same kind of money, it'll be another Indian movie. It, in the world's eyes, it's all the same. And that's kind of the perspective that I have to look at because, you know, I'm not Indian. You know,
this, what?
I know, right? I mean, I look at all this stuff. I feel like I have a more balanced view than many people who are Indian or of Indian descent because I don't have the same kind of, you know, cultural attachments to a particular industry that most other people might. But still, it's all, I'm an outsider no matter what. And, you know, while I'm like, I'm excited about the fact that a Telugu film has made this kind of impression. If I say Telugu to the average person on the street, they won't know what I'm saying. It doesn't make any difference to them. You know, it's an Indian film and I can, if I needed to sell it that way, I could do so. But, yeah. You know, it's still amusing to me after all these years, you know, years of, as far as my writing and then just years in general, 100 years of Indian film, that they're still having this fight. You know, there's still this sort of competition between languages. And I've seen it in my own responses to the film and friends' responses to the film and the box office numbers and everything that you know, Telugu people are rightfully, I think, very proud of the success that Bahubali's had. Because, and I said this to a friend of mine who has no interest in Indian films at all, but, you know, the fact that the film opened third in the U.S. box office last week was surprising to a lot of people. And so he had mentioned it on Twitter and his Twitter tweet, not praising the film, saying nothing about the film, apart from the fact that it made a bunch of money, was retweeted over 3,000 times by people who are proud that their industry is getting recognition, even though it's not the industry that's getting recognition. It's the fact that any film that doesn't star Vin Diesel or The Rock made that much money, you know, and beat out the Tom Hanks movie. Like, that was the big deal.
Yeah. It's almost like people of New Zealand being proud of Lord of the Rings.
It would be. It'd be the exact same thing. It'd be like Jay Mordor or Jay the Shire, whatever. Like all the Jay Mahishmati, he had no idea. He thought people were trying to attack him. I was like, no, that's not what it is. It's difficult to explain to an outsider, you know.
Yeah, because they made the smart move of releasing the first Bahubali on YouTube with good prints and good subtitles, right, on official channels, which is amazing. I think more producers should do that. So I sent it to one of my co-hosts on the podcast, Yuji, and I was like, dude, you have to watch this movie. He had never heard of it and all that. And then he was like, dude, is this a Bollywood movie? And then I went into this 20-minute explanation, and I could just hear his interest go away, and I'm pretty sure he hasn't watched the movie just because of my explanation about that this is not a Bollywood movie.
It's all your fault, Asim, then.
It is. I lost Rajamouli like one click. Like, personally, I feel responsible. But Josh, you actually touched a point I wanted to ask to you about, and then I want to move on to the movie itself a little bit more.
There's a movie?
How is, because there has been some news, and this is my pet peeve, and I know it's yours too, Josh. So a lot of, you know, podcasters, reviewers that work for big movie sites, they do not care, interest, cover Indian movies. But this has made so much noise. Do you think it's going to change something? Do you think, you know, the BBC articles or the news segments or Variety writing about this, although Variety does write about Indian movies regularly, do you think it's going to, you know, having massive prints, will people venture into to Bahubali and that have never seen an Indian movie and kind of hook into it in some way or the other?
I think that there won't be any large sort of wholesale change in people's habits. What I do think is, and what I've seen, is that people who are already clued into film and box office and international film in general may be more adventurous and go see this movie. I don't think it's going to translate across the board to Indian cinema in general. I know that several, many theaters in the U.S. that don't normally show Indian films are now trying to pick up on this. And the Alamo Drafthouse here, for example, is doing a couple of screenings of the film in Hindi, much to my chagrin. But they're doing it. And I think that people who are loyal to that brand, the Alamo brand, which is, you know, for film fans here is a big deal. They'll be willing to give it a shot because the Alamo thinks it's okay. It's like it's that kind of
like a stamp of approval.
Yeah. I think that will happen. But I don't think it's going to change the overall market. I think, like I said before, this is an anomaly. Like this is, and even what you said with Variety, you know, the guy that writes for Variety, Naman, is an Indian. And so, you know, he does cover that market pretty well. And he covers a lot of that stuff. But even one of the things, when I saw the film last Thursday, I went home and reviewed it Thursday night. I know for a fact that I was, for the first couple of days, the only non-Indian, you know, outlet that had written review for the film. And this was after it made already, you know, $10 or $11 million. Shortly thereafter, during the weekend, on Saturday or Sunday, The Guardian, UK reviewed it. And then that was it. I think yesterday or 2 days ago, RogerEbert.com reviewed, and that was the third non-Indian outlet to review it. So it's not like the film is exceptional because it's making so much money, and that's causing people to pay a little bit of attention. But based on the fact that it, you know, there were far more reviews for really any other Indian film, or certainly any Bollywood film, any big Bollywood film would have had a review in the New York Times, you know, in the LA Times or something like that. And this film didn't. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there was just little access to the movie for critics, you know, a fight that I've been fighting for many years is that we don't get critics screenings here. You know, they used to do critics or advanced screenings for critics in New York, and they don't even do that anymore.
There's a trend that's been happening here too, more and more in the UK.
Yeah. And so it's lovely that it's in the news. And you know, more power to them, but I don't think this is going to change the market in any discernible way. I think it's its own exception. It's the exception to the rule of how Indian films are treated around the world.
Right. Let's get into the movie a little bit more. Unless Amrita Sujoy, there's a talking point that I'd missed out, or we absolutely need to get into or talk a little bit about.
Nope.
The movie itself. Let's start with something fun. What was the most bonker scene? The one that in your sleep you're still going to be thinking about. What was the one that you said, oh my god, how can bloody Rajamouli even think of these? Josh, man, what was your favorite one?
It was being launched over the Mahishmati castle walls.
Shield catapult?
With the trees.
I call it shield catapult. Okay.
The shield catapults, that made me, that my smile reached beyond my face. It was so amazing to see that, because that's the kind of imagination that I expected. That was my moment.
Sujoy, man. Go ahead.
Sorry, just like what Josh just said, what I loved though was that it wasn't just like the core group that was doing it. It was all of them.
Exactly. I expected, like, when Prabhas and when Bahubali did it, I was fine. And then it just kept happening. It just made me smile for like 5 minutes.
Oh, I loved it.
Was the same one for you that stood out, Amrita, or another scene or something?
Oh, no. For me, it was like when the bull-drawn scissor blade cart came out, like with the Highland cattle or whatever they were. I don't know what they were. They were like so cute. And then they were like, we are the weapons of death. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. I love it. I loved how steampunk everything was in this movie. And in the first one. Like, I don't think it gets enough credit for that.
It was very kind of Mad Max Master Blaster kind of thing going on suddenly.
Yes.
Sujoy, man.
I know. I think, like, you guys have already mentioned both the bonker scene that I thought the one with the catapult, and as well as the Amarendra and Devasena arrow ballet.
Yeah.
That was really, really well choreographed, I believe. But I think my most memorable scene in the movie, like, in terms of the whole entire setup was the scene just before the interval where Bilal Dev is being coronated and the whole ceremony is taking place, and Bahubali has to take charge as the Senapati, and he is kind of organizing the entire ceremony. The music, the setup, everything is just larger than life. And yeah, it's just, yeah. Thinking about it, it's just in this theater, the thumping sound and everything, it's just larger than life.
And I was kind of thinking, like, when I was seeing that role, like, man, Bahubali, Bhalladev really dodged a bullet, because that is a shitty job to have, man. Like, just walking in front of the king is like, Bhalla, man, smart play on that one. like, for me, yeah, the reaction you had on Shield Catapult, I had that on Bow Kata. You know, you have Gun Kata, this was Bow Arrow Kata, that's all. I love that. That was amazing. It almost reminded me a little bit of, obviously, Gun Kata from Equilibrium, but also that Deepika Padukone scene in Triple X, where the two girls come out with the knives and they start shooting, and it was kind of that choreography. I really loved that. But the other two scenes that I really loved is one, the buffaloes on fire.
That was one I was going to mention as well. Yeah. That was great.
That was like, man, I there's no way I could even in my wildest imaginations think of that. And it is amazing. And the other one was not for the visual element, but for the amazingness of it, is the courtroom scene and the kind of, the denouement of what happened when, you know, Devasena is in chains and Bahubali makes his appearance and kind of makes a very swift judgment. That was amazing. That was amazing.
Yeah, Bahubali also does not have any chill. Nobody has any chill in this movie. No.
They're big on decapitation in that kingdom for sure.
Yeah.
Decapitation is the new black over there.
Also, following the bulls on fire scene when Bahubali runs up the damn pole with the two hooks, amazing shot. Amazing shot.
Yeah.
That reminded me of, and the thing is with this movie, a lot of it reminds you of other things, but it's done in a very, and I don't mind that. I'm not saying it in a way that, you know, Rajamouli copied it or whatever like that, but it's just, you know, it's very classic storytelling. Like, and I'm going to talk about that later because we're going to get to the big mystery now, I think, but, nothing is necessarily new. It's just the kind of characters he's built up and the kind of emotional stakes that he's built up and kind of just like a new kind of vision of these stories, like a new dressing on the template, which makes the movie good. I think Rajamouli would probably be the first to say it's nothing original necessarily, but that when he was running up it, it made me think of that terrible, terrible 3D movie, Beowulf, that came out a while ago. Did you ever watch that? There's this shot where there's a mouse running up, kind of a same kind of thing that he's running up. It just kind of reminded me of that and how cool it would be if you could just follow him that way. They didn't do that, but it was pretty cool. Actually, dude, like, again, like, that Shield Catapult was the scene that the movie lost me for a minute. I was like, dude, I can't, like, this is too much. Yeah, that one was like, yeah, I can't anymore.
But you were okay with the flying ship.
Flying ship, I get it, because A, it's romance.
Wasn't flying ship a metaphor? Like, did I just misread the entire movie?
Who knows, like, Amrita? Who knows what a metaphor in this movie is and what's reality? I don't know. I thought it was real. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I thought it was, like, really cool, but it was just, like, because then, like, you know, they start off, like, sailing down the river, and then, like, when they lock their eyes, and then they start, you know, sort of dreaming about each other. So then I thought, it must be, like, dreaming.
I'm with Amrita on this one.
That it's a metaphor?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe that explains why gravity does not hold on their dance moves in that movie, in that song.
That's true.
I thought they just had Michael Jackson's Smooth Criminal rigs with them. They were like, you know, like, same move.
What did you guys feel about the music?
I really liked that, especially the Kanha Sojazara, the Krishna song where she's singing to...
Yes.
You know, make him sleep. I really like that song.
Did you like the music better in this one or the last one?
I don't know. I like one song from the first one, and I like one song from this one. That's kind of equal, I guess. But overall, like, I think the score of the movie is as memorable as any big epic movie that you would expect it to be.
Come on, really?
Like, yeah, I think... Dum, 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 dum,
no, 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 that, you're that talking just, about the background score now, right?
Yeah, that just reminds me of Bahubali, right? And that's...
Yeah.
So I thought Dhivara was like, I don't know what... I only know the Telugu one. So Dhivara was the one where he imagines Tamanna in the first movie, and then he sort of like makes that leap and like he makes it to the top of the waterfall. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know what it's called in Hindi. But I thought that is still the best song of the two movies. Like, I thought the way it was picturized and the song itself was just beautiful. But I did like the Krishna song in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like so I've heard like a lot of people really praise the flying boat one. And I honestly thought it was like a bit too retro Telugu fantasy song, which I mean, a lot of people really love that stuff. So, you know, no shade on them, but it's not really my thing. So I thought it was fine.
I personally didn't like it. I didn't like any of the songs necessarily. I liked in the first one, the waterfall song, I really liked. But again, how much is it because of the visuals and how much is it because of the song itself? And I mean, apparently he's a very respected music composer. I think it's M.M. Cream. But I honestly didn't care for any of the songs. I love the background score. And my favorite kind of motif is actually the... I'm really terrible with the names, but the new Bahubali version 2, not the old version. He has
Mahendra.
He has like a specific theme with like very a distorted kind of sound, and they play it also in the trailer. That I love. Mm-hmm. When that came up in the second fight scene, I was like, man, that sounds so good. It almost feels
the
like
the crunchy guitars and the dubstep.
Yeah, it's kind of like Inception-y in a way. I'm terrible with explaining music. It's not my thing, but that was wow. That is cool.
What about you, Josh?
I always get the music ahead of time, and listen to it, and none of it makes any sense. And when I listened to the soundtrack for the second film before, you know, weeks before the film came out, I listened to it mostly out of a sense of obligation because I'd already purchased it. But then after I see the film, like, it starts to come together. So what Asim's saying about not being able to necessarily separate the music from the visuals, I find that for me personally, when watching Indian films, it's very, very difficult to do that because if I go back now and listen to the soundtrack for this or the first film, like, I'm immediately visualizing that scene in the film. Yeah. It's one of the reasons why Indian music appeals to me, or Indian film music appeals to me, is because I can connect it to something. Because I'm like Asim said, I'm not a particularly astute music critic or anything like that. I know what I like. And that being said, though, there is no song, like Asim said, in part two that is as good as Dhivara. Like, and also like Amrita said, that's the song of this entire series. Like, I can listen to that song and I still get chills listening to it. You know, unfortunately they threw an English version on the tail end of the first soundtrack, which is awful.
Good.
It's terrible, but that song is fantastic, and the two that you've mentioned so far, also listening to them now after having seen the film, I can get into. But it's not really, the soundtrack wasn't overwhelmingly good to begin with, I don't think. Mm. But the way the films are, the songs are visualized and picturized, I think does make a huge difference.
So as far as... did anybody watch the Hindi version of this movie, or were you all watched the Tamil or the Telugu version?
I watched the Hindi one.
You watched the Hindi one? How are the songs? Are they translated? Are they who sings them? Or
they've got legit singers singing the Hindi versions. Yeah.
All right, okay, good.
And I think the guy who dubs Bahubali's voice is Sharad Kelkar, who is there is a Mohenjo-daro connection there. So Sharad Kelkar plays Hrithik Roshan's father in Mohenjo-daro.
Wait, really?
Well, he dies in his youth, right? Spoilers for Mohenjo-daro. If you're planning on watching it.
Thanks, Joy.
Now I'm definitely not watching that movie. Ashutosh
Gowarikar would be so proud to hear that from you, Amrita.
Poor guy. Okay, so let's get into the movie. Like, the first question I want to ask you guys is, I mean, this movie, and I don't think they were probably intending it to be that way, but the whole marketing campaign became about why did Kattappa kill, kill Bahubali, right? So mm-hmm. that was kind of that big mystery. And I mean, I'll go first. For me, it was never a big mystery for me. I kind of knew why he would have killed him, because the whole sense of, you know, honor and all that kind of thing is just built into it. So I don't know. Did you guys, Amrita, did you ever feel that mystery had a proper payoff, or did you have expectations and they were met or not met with it?
So like you, I didn't really find it a mystery. Like, I was like, he probably got an order to do it. That's probably why he did it. Yeah. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it. But I think it was just a real, it was one of those pop culture moments, you know, like it just became like this catchphrase, like, why did Kattappa kill Bahubali? Like, it became like this thing. And I was actually kind of really worried about how this movie would handle that scene, because I was like, well, it's always going to be a letdown because it's such a straightforward answer. At least in my head, like the way I was imagining it, it was going to be a really straightforward answer. And it was a straightforward answer, but what they did was they really focused on the relationship between those two people. And I actually teared up in that scene. And I was just like, wait, what? Am I feeling emotions here? Like, what's happening? So I feel like, and also, like, I'm the world's easiest mark when it comes to, like, emotions in a movie. Like, you can manipulate me so easily.
Amrita, you and me should just go to movies and cry. Like,
sob, like sit there and sob. Which is why I actually have a lot of problems with like Bollywood movies that don't, like, you know, do the job they're supposed to do, because I'm like, I'm the world's easiest mark. If you can't make me believe in your shitty manipulation, then what is even the point? So full marks to Bahubali for doing that. Like, they actually made me really invested in those two characters and how difficult it must have been for Kattappa and everything. So yeah, I felt that there was a really great payoff for people who were looking for one.
What about you, meme expert? Because I feel this was kind of built as a meme. Like, that was
the I don't think the filmmakers intended it to be the selling point for the second movie, because we all wanted to know how actually Mahendra Bahubali would come and take revenge upon his, you know, evil uncle. That was the pull. But I think the meme just grew larger than it should have. And that is not Rajamouli's concern in the first place. I thought it was fine. And also, as Amrita said, you know, they invested in the relationship between Kattappa and Bahubali more in this movie, and how they, you know, the history they share and the kind of family connection they have with this character. One confusing thing that I have regarding that particular scene is, how did the tribe of Kalkea got involved in that particular scene? So did Kattappa build the whole, invite them to attack him so that he might be under attack whilst he stabs him in the back, or I don't know.
Yeah, I had some questions about that too. I didn't really understand that.
What kind of theories have you got, Josh?
None. And I was surprised to see that as part of the sequence as well. Like, I feel like you guys are saying that it could have been incorporated better, or explained a little bit. I think that your theory is as valid as any I might come up with, that it was basically to cover up if any sort of, you know, mishap occurred, that he would have an excuse that we were attacked by so-and-so and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was unusual.
And I really like the fact that, you know, because, and I think I'm going to get into this a bit later on, where I want to kind of get into the negatives of the movie. And I think one of the problems I had with Bahubali 2 is that I cared for the people and the characters in Bahubali 1. And a lot of those people just get totally changed or sidetracked. And I felt, you know, like, Kattappa is almost comedy uncle for a large part of this movie, right? And I kind of missed, like, disciplined Kattappa from the first movie. And I kind of got a bit back at that moment. You kind of get that guy back. And that I really liked. And I also just liked that, you know, he's this whole idea about that he's a surrogate dad for Bahubali, which was very sweet. And again, I didn't cry for once, but it was very effective. And I think Rajamouli in the interview, he was saying that was one of the scenes that one of the only scenes that he tweaked on location. So maybe those elements, maybe that kind of seasoning, he kind of added to it. But Sujoy, I agree with you. I had no idea why he brought those tribes people back, because that was probably one of the parts that was most kind of criticized of his portrayal of darker people in this movie. So I was just kind of surprised that these guys came back. They came and they were completely inconsequential. And it's funny because he did those both things. Like, there were two criticisms on Bahubali 1. One was the treatment of Avantika, and second was these darker tribe people. And he just doubled down on him. He's like, okay, you're going to criticize me? Here you go, man. I'm going to make Tamanna's character completely inconsequential this time. Like, I was like, what's going on? Like, she didn't even get married to Bahubali at the end. Like, she just stood there.
Like, she gets one shot in the trailer for Bahubali 2, and that's the same one that lands up in the movie. Like, yeah. That's it.
That's that one dialogue, one line she has, right?
Yeah. But interesting.
Wait, she had a line?
Yeah, it's like save Ma or something, like, you know, like protect Ma.
Oh, that's just mean.
Yeah.
But it's interesting though, like when at the end of the first movie, when Katappa is kind of rewinding the story and he says that I was the one who killed him, and then they move to the shot and the music comes up, and then you see like there's fire in the background and he's being stabbed. So the whole recreation of that scene, I know this was a continuation of the same story and not like contrived in some way, but it's interesting to see that whole thing being recreated by what was the fire that created that fire that appeared in that scene. So yeah, it was interesting that way, but there's still quite a bit unexplained in this.
Yeah. So what other elements didn't work for you in the movie? Josh, man, I want to go with you first, because you've pretty much been very, very positive about the movie. So it would be kind of interesting to know, were there elements for me? You know, I don't know, like, I don't know if this is, like, again, I have no context, but I really like Tamanna. I've liked her as an actress. I've seen her on a few Hindi movies, which terrible, terrible Hindi movies, but I think I like her. I just like her presence in it. So I liked her in Bahubali 1, but I don't know if she's, you know, I don't know if she's a Deepika of South India, or she's a, you know, Sonam Kapoor of South India, or, you know, whatever, you know, so I don't understand the position. I just like her. So I felt it was kind of a shame that she got totally sidetracked. But, were there things that didn't work? I mean, character wise, performance wise, or pacing wise for you?
I think I'm disappointed, in the lack of evolution of Tamanna's character of Avantika. It's one of the things that I criticized about the first film, was her treatment. I wasn't quite as enthusiastic about my criticism as some people were, but I didn't think that she got quite enough to do, and I was looking forward to more. But I had prepared myself for this eventuality because, you know, having followed the news and everything, you know, Rajamouli made fairly clear, you know, at least a year ago that the second film was not going to be her story. So I think that he did write by the female characters of the story in his treatment of Devasena, I think. And I think that was I don't know if it was a correction, because, you know, as we've talked about it, it was sort of one large story that just had to get chopped into pieces because it was too big. So I don't know how much of Devasena's story was a sort of course correction as far as avoiding that kind of criticism this time around. But if you hadn't seen the first film, you know, which is going to be the case for some people who are now just discovering it because it's becoming big news, because of the box office, then when this woman shows up at the end of the movie, you know, to lay siege to Mahishmati, it's going to be baffling. You know, who's this woman that shows up? Because, like you said, she has virtually no lines and she just kind of shows up with a sword and that's it. So that was, I feel like she could have maybe been incorporated more. Although the typical Telugu formula for these sort of flashback films is, and I feel silly saying this even, is a lot less flashback and a lot more, you know, modern times. They're generally split about half and half, and this one is almost entirely flashback with, you know, just the retribution, at the very end of the film. Another thing that I know they worked very hard on, but it just, some of it was a bit disconcerting, was some of the visual effects were not quite where I think they could have been. I don't know if they were rushed. I don't know if that was just the capacity they had. And specifically, the one thing that bothered me the most, was at the very end of the film when, well, if we're spoiling.
We're in spoiler section.
Okay. When the head of the statue is sort of floating down the river and down, like the head didn't look real great. That was, and yeah, I'm a big believer in films, you know, no matter how good your movie is, I'm going to remember how your movie ended, you know, most vividly, because that's where I was when I walked out. And that was the one thing that was a bit disappointing to me. It wasn't the action. It wasn't the story. It wasn't the acting. It was none of that. It was the fact that this head didn't look quite right when it was floating down the river. And I mean, there were other moments like that that I was able to forgive, because they were, you know, typical Rajamouli, very big, you know, moments. The scene you were talking about where he's running up the dam, you know, there are some other scenes where it's fairly clear that it's not a person. It's a CGI version of a person. And I'm willing to go with those things, because they are, you know, they're part of the storytelling. They're not this is what I was mentioning to you on Twitter, is that they are in service of the story. Like the effects serve the story and not the other way around. You know, Rajamouli has big ideas. He doesn't always have the capacity to visualize those ideas, I think, in the best possible way. I think what bothered me the most about that last scene with the statue head was that they linger on it for so long. And, you know, while them lingering on it for so long does do a great job of circling back to the beginning of the film, the beginning of the series, and it completes the circle, you know, of the Bahubali story. It also gives me a really long time to stare at a CGI head that doesn't look very good, you know? And so that was a problem. Yeah. As far as thematic issues, I didn't really have any. I don't have a whole lot of concern about that. You know, like we were talking about earlier, the religious, and cultural aspects didn't bother me, largely because I don't understand them very well still, you know, and so that wasn't a big issue for me. The treatment of the characters I thought was better than the first film, with Devasena's character getting a full storyline and getting her own agency and her own ability to make her decisions, whether or not they were good. That's part of the story. I'm not going to worry about that, but she was able to flesh out a character much better than Tamanna was in the first film. So yeah, those are big.
Is Anushka Shetty, I imagine so, is she like a bigger actress than Tamanna is in South India?
I don't know that there's that big of a difference. You know, one of the things that's a bit different about between the South Indian films and North Indian films is that the actresses in South India are very, very interchangeable. And so much so that they will go between Tamil and Telugu films, you know, very frequently, you know, which is something that Bollywood actresses don't really do. And there are almost no, like, to borrow a phrase from the certification board, no women-oriented films in South India. Mm. So it's very, very few. And I think the one exception that might be made at this point is Nayanthara, who's a Tamil actress who gets her own movies. But really, the other ones are just there to look pretty in a dress most of the time.
Oh, really? Wow, okay.
Sorry.
Mm. So I do think, like, Anushka is a bit of an exception as well, because I think she's been able to, like, build up a reputation as a fine actress. I think you can kind of see that in the way the two women are portrayed in part one and two. Like the way, like the costumes Tamanna wears, like as Avantika in the first part, and the costumes that Anushka wears in the second part. Now, obviously, they're supposed to be women from two separate classes and two separate time periods. But I was kind of taken aback by just how covered up Anushka was compared to Tamanna. So there's like a very distinct difference in gaze, I feel, in the way the two of them were portrayed. But yeah, like whatever Josh said, like that's basically what I felt as well. Like the Kattappa killing Bahubali was like basically the last scene in the first part, and it really made an impact. And, you know, we were just talking about that. But in this one, I feel the VFX, you know, like, and I knew the moment this movie came out and people started talking about it, that to outsiders, to like non-Indians, this is basically going to be like the movie that showcases Indian VFX. Like, you know, this is what India can do for a fraction of the budget. Like, these are things that I have heard over and over again in the past 4 years. And it's been especially true of this movie and Hyderabad, like, you know, where the Telugu industry is basically headquartered, is basically ground zero for the Indian VFX industry. So they're actually not far off when they're talking about that. And I feel like they could have done a much better job. I don't know if they were trying to rush it into theaters, if, you know, they had like budgetary concerns and they just needed to get it out there, and this was the best that they could do in whatever time they had. But at one point, I remember thinking that I wish some parts of this movie had been overseen by Sanjay Leela Bhansali, because you know that it would never have made it out without him being like obsessively sitting there making sure everything was just perfect before it went out.
But I must say, the worst of Bahubali and VFX is still the best of Mohenjo-daro.
I have to take your word for it.
I've not seen Mohenjo-daro. I just kind of give it swipes left and right. Who's got
mostly
time for that?
Left swipes.
So, Jayman, anything for you that didn't work, or, you know, pacing wise?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have already mentioned about the bad CGI of the golden head. But I think let's not focus on the bad anymore. Like, I really like this movie. Yeah, there are some silly VFX, but there are some really good ones as well. Like in the beginning scene when Shivagami has to march through to the temple and the elephant is going wild. I can't distinguish if the elephant is real or CG. And some scenes are CG and some are the real elephant. And I've tried this 3 times now and I failed. So that's really a good job. Yeah.
Even with the buffalo scene, the buffaloes look quite real until the point that he starts jumping on them. But they look quite, it's really well rendered and all. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. I mean, for me,
you know, and some of the things that are good about those is I will toot my own horn here. Having been on the set and seeing some of the stuff like in real life, it's amazing to see how much of the film was created using the VFX and how seamlessly it does integrate. Mm. And that's one of the things that one of the reasons that the giant statue head, the golden head floating down the river, bothered me a bit was because I saw that head in person. It was 20 feet high. I asked if I could take a picture and they said no, because it obviously plays a part in the conclusion of the film. They didn't want those pictures getting out. On that other scene that Sujoy was talking about at the very beginning with the elephant going crazy, the big wagon that Prabhas carts out with the Ganesh on it, I saw that too. And it was, the Ganesh wasn't there, but that wagon was full size. And so the fact that the Ganesh was not real, but the wagon was, is, you know, it's good enough to fool me, you know, and I saw those things in real life, in person. I touched them. And so, I think, like Sujoy said, harping on the negative is probably not a great idea, but there were far, far, far more successes than failures, I think, in any department of the film. Pointing out the deficiencies is, it's what we do, we're critics, but I do think it's important to note that for the little things that we note that aren't necessarily perfect, that there are 10,000 things that work great.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the problems that I had was that shield catapult point where the movie kind of lost me a little bit. And then a lot, you know, what it is when you're kind of on a train and you're kind of enjoying everything and then suddenly you're off tracks and you just can't catch up with what's going on anymore. And that one scene was just like maybe too much Rajamouliness for me. I don't get it, but it just kind of, because he has the shield catapults, then he slides under one of the, I don't know what it is, like a weapon or something, and it's really bad VFX, and then they start doing this, you know, kung fu kata, whatever they're doing, and then I have all these questions coming up, which again, in a movie like this, you shouldn't have, but I was like, man, like building materials really went to shit in the last 20 years because you can just punch out an elephant now. And like, like how come Bhalla became so strong? He was like he's been just taking steroids for the 20 years. Like he's like, what is he supposed to be 70 now or something? Like, I don't even know what the ages of these people are, but it's like also like the old Bahubali. He was like a super proficient fighter because he was like a trained soldier from the start of his life. But the second V2 version, he's just like a, what is he? He's like just a farmer, right? Like a very strong farmer. No, isn't he? I'm not being offensive or jokey. Isn't he like just a strong farmer? Or
See, Asim, I've seen this movie 3 times now, so I probably have some authority maybe to say this. But I've followed it very carefully, and I think Amarendra Bahubali, the father, fights much better and is more swift with the sword. Yeah. And the second one has more brutal strength in that way.
Yeah, I did see a difference in fighting style between the two.
The second one, in the climax scenes, if you see, he's more like raw power, and he can't really sling his sword as swiftly or as poetically as his father could.
Because his father
he basically like defeats Bhalla by like beating him with a chain, right? Like he basically punches him out.
Yeah,
he's bloody Kratos.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, like when he's under attack, his father is under attack, he gets like a bull stampede going. And when the son gets attacked, he's like, yeah, shield catapults, this is a good idea. That kind of really explains the strategy between the both of them. But again, I do like, and the thing is, like, a lot of times we talk about the movie and the success of the movie, but I really feel it's more Rajamouli and his uniqueness and his talent, you know, and his just basic understanding of how a story should work. And, you know, like just having a Chekhov's gun of, you know, the three arrow bow. You know, it's like he sets it up, he pays it off. The walk of fire that Shivagami does in the first one, Devasena does it in the second one. They build something up, they pay it off. It's just very simple storytelling, but it just makes sense. And it's like, it almost makes me feel when, you know, like Pulp Fiction came out in the 90s, we had so many Pulp Fictions after that, you know, and like, you know, Go and like so many other ones I remember at that time. And who are those directors? Where are they now? But Quentin Tarantino is still there. I think this is kind of what's going to happen.
Yeah, there is a video essay on YouTube, I think by Nerdwriter or something, who talks about, you know, setting up a scene with different elements happening at different parts of the film and all coming up together in one particular scene. And he was talking about this with Mad Max Fury Road. And I could see the same happening in Bahubali, when different parts of the action are happening at different parts of the same particular arena, and it all comes together and some part gets destroyed, and the consequences of that flowing into different directions. It all comes together beautifully.
I think we're done now. Any other points that we want to kind of talk about? Because I don't want to split this podcast in two pieces, because then I'll need to invent some sort of mystery. Like,
this is the beginning.
This is the beginning and then the conclusion. Any other points? Like, I think we covered pretty much everything. It's weird. Like, one more thing. It's really weird to see. She's Ramya, right? Shivagami?
Ramya Krishnan?
Yeah. Ramya Krishnan.
Because, again, I'm a Bollywood guy. I just know her from Khalnaik, right? Like, that's where she's burnt into my adolescent brain, where I became a man. So,
I'm Criminal.
Yeah, dude, she's still very, very hot, like with those burning eyes. Like, I know she's trying to be like a matriarch, but man, she's got it, man. She's still got it. Totally side note, totally inappropriate, but yeah, I thought she was like, she was amazing, man. I thought she was bloody on fire. It's amazing. Yeah.
One question though, like, so the second part starts off with Katappa narrating the recap story, right? So everything that happens until the interval is kind of what Katappa tells from Katappa's perspective. So Katappa probably narrated like Amarendra Bahubali's engineering feats as well, like gears and pulleys and everything.
Yeah. That was very Swadesh of him.
Yeah, I know. So when Katappa says to Mahendra, think like your father, did it mean that? So the whole pulley thing, the palm tree pulley thing, was all Katappa's idea?
No, I think that was his version of the bull stampede. It's like, think like your father. Okay, let's pull this tree, man. I don't know. It was an interesting one. And normally this is a pet peeve of mine when like a voiceover narration starts and then it gets completely sidelined for the rest of the movie. So I it's good that they split this movie in two parts because I'd forgotten that Kathappa is the narrator of the first movie. Any other thing that we want to kind of random ideas or things that we had about the movie that we want to kind of still get into?
I just hope this helps Rajmouli go somewhere. I mean,
where would you want him to go, for example? Because I asked him this question too, you know, and he was being a bit coy about it. But where would he go?
You know, and he said the same thing to me that other Indian filmmakers have said that are very, very talented. He's like, he wants to continue making movies the way he makes them, and he wants to continue making Indian stories, which is not very conducive to him, you know, going to Hollywood or whatever to go, because I've had people talk about just half jokingly, you know, give Rajamouli the next Fast and Furious movie or whatever.
Terrible idea.
Yeah, but I don't think, like, I think he could do something very interesting with the kind of budget and assets that a studio would have to offer him, but I don't know that he would be interested in working in that system because it is so, there are so many checks and balances. I think that one of the things that makes him so unique is the fact that he's basically given carte blanche to do whatever he feels is going to work.
Mm.
And, you know, with his producer, with his father, the guy that wrote the story, Vijendra Prasad, they just basically let Rajmouli go because there's, at this point, no reason not to.
Hmm.
When I was speaking to people when I was in Hyderabad, they said, you know, he is like the exception to the rule. You know, he hasn't made any films that have flopped. Everything has made money. Everyone's always loved his movies. He is on the same level in Andhra Pradesh as, you know, as Prabhas, as the actors that he's making famous, as Junior NTR, as all these guys. And so while I would love to see him, you know, make something bigger with the kind of budget and assets that Hollywood would have to offer, I don't think it's necessarily in his best interest because those aren't the stories that he wants to tell, you know?
Mm.
I don't know where I want him to go. I don't think I want him to make a movie in Bollywood or anything like that because I just don't think that's where his heart is. Mm. But if this opens up anything for him, you know, maybe doing a co-production with, you know, between India and perhaps, you know, Sony Japan or one of those companies that would be willing to fund him, kind of like Stephen Chow has now.
Mm-hmm.
Like Stephen Chow, after making Kung Fu Hustle and Shaolin Soccer, now can make movies that are co-funded with Sony in Japan and make them on bigger budgets. Films like Journey to the West, Journey to the West 2, The Mermaid, those movies, you know, they're still very Stephen Chow films, but they're made with the kind of money that he wouldn't have had access to prior to his success with things like Kung Fu Hustle. So maybe that's where Rajmouli needs to go.
Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting because I feel it's hard to go bigger after Bahubali. Like, I don't know what he would necessarily, you know, and I don't know how many times also he can go back to the reincarnation well. Because he's done it three times now too, so I think that's a story to maybe need to avoid a little bit. I don't know how. Maybe are all movies about reincarnation in Telugu cinema or something?
80%.
80%. Okay.
something like that.
Is it like kind of the lost sibling of 80s Bollywood movies? Where every 80s Bollywood movie about losing.
Well, they do lean so much on not necessarily Hinduism as a religion, but the Hindu like Amrit was saying, the Hindu version of Indian culture down there, that the reincarnation thing is very big. You know, I'm trying to think back on his last, you know, several films. I think the only one that didn't have any like sort of mythological leanings or Hindu culture related leanings was probably Mariyada Ramana, which is a great film on its own. But you would have to go back a good 10, 12 years to find one of Rajmouli's films that doesn't lean on that sort of crutch, the reincarnation or something like that.
Yeah. The other thing would be maybe, you know, making something universal because his father did also write Bajrangi Bhaijaan. yeah. which I guess is a very, very big hit in the Hindi part of the country. So, mm-hmm. Which is not about reincarnation. It's kind of dealing with more with international kind of back and forth politics or whatever. So it's a tough one. I don't know where I want him to go. I just kind of want to see him, you know, make more movies that I can actually get access to and watch them, because Iga and Magadira and Abhubali were the only three. The other ones that you've mentioned or he mentioned in the interview, I've never come across them. So that I think that's one thing that I would love to change. I would like to, you know, educate myself as a biased North Indian kind of viewer, that I can get access to these movies easily, you know, be it on Netflix or whatever else. But again, do you want to watch, you know, want to watch a Rajamouli movie on a Netflix thing? You know, you want to watch it on an IMAX, you know? So it's a tough one. I don't know what I want.
But if you want to see like more Telugu action movies, then basically all you need to do is like look up the Salman Khan Resurgence movies, like the ones that gave him back his career, yeah. and then just look up their counterparts.
See which one they remade.
Telugu. Yeah. And the nice thing about those movies is that you can basically watch them even without subtitles and they would still make sense, because it's literally guy comes up, like starts shit, beats the hell out of people, gets the girl, there you go. So yeah. It's like,
I've seen many of them in theaters with no subtitles, and I can guarantee that Amrita is 100% correct.
And there's so much fun. Like you, like yeah. I actually had like some of the, like, you know, like I'm a big Mahesh, like what's his face? Prince.
Babu.
Mahesh Babu fan. And, you know, I don't think I've seen a single one of his movies with subtitles. So I have like no idea what any of them are saying at any point, but I still have the time of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
But as far as Rajamouli goes, like if he actually moves into Hindi, I'm kind of wondering how that rabid fan base of like, you know, southern movie buffs who are right now basically talking about how he's this amazing director and the pride of South India, like how would they react to him having a Hindi career?
Like a traitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was a tweet by some southern movie director who was praising the vision of Rajamouli, and he just innocently tweeted how amazing it would be if Rajnikanth collaborated with Rajamouli, and people just trolled the fuck out of him, saying Rajnikanth doesn't need Rajamouli, or on the other end of the spectrum where Rajamouli doesn't need Rajnikanth. So it's just like, yeah, that's how Indian fans are.
But I've got a genuine question for Josh. You've seen the movie in IMAX versus a normal screening. Are there particular scenes which have a larger aspect ratio, or the screen goes wider?
No, it wasn't anything like that.
Okay.
The one thing I did notice, and I think I mentioned this earlier, was that between the IMAX screening and the regular screen, that there was some like blurring of some bloody parts, but that was it. That wasn't there the first time I saw it.
Okay. So.
But no, it doesn't open up or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
Great. I think that's it for Bahubali. We almost reached 2 hours, so I think it required the kind of length of podcast that the movie kind of gave us.
Come back in 2 years for the conclusion.
One of the co-hosts is going to get killed, and who killed him? So, yeah, let's wrap up. Amrita, where can people find you online?
On Twitter at AmritaIQ.
Great. And yeah, you all the kind of things that Amrita said on the podcast, just tweet to her, right?
Super nice. I don't know what anyone's talking about.
You know, like last time I had you, Amrita, on the podcast, like we got some new listeners again, because it happens with every new co-host or new topics and stuff like that. And they were like, yeah, whatever Amrita is saying is really smart, but everybody else is just gossiping. I was like, what the hell, man? All my intellectual insights are gossip now. I really felt bad after that tweet. Like, normally I never let it touch it, but I was like, huh.
I think you're intellectual, I think.
Sure. You really made me believe that one. After I totally objectified Shivagami, right?
Yeah.
Sujoy, man, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @93k.
Great. Josh?
I'm at screenanarchy.com and Hateful Josh on Twitter.
Great. And I'm Asim Burney. You can follow us on upodcasting.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or leave us a review. Or if you have any burning questions or criticism, you can drop us an email at upodcasting@gmail.com. I don't know if people actually bother emailing to a podcast anymore. It doesn't seem to happen that much. It's like, I hate you on Twitter now. which is fun. It has its own joy. But yeah. I hope everybody enjoyed the discussions, and we'll be back with a new episode very soon. Thank you for listening. से ये हाथ जोड़ लो ना।